Hey there, Rick Singeri of Vermont Edition. Just want you to know this podcast has been edited for brevity. Thanks for listening.
This is Vermont Edition. I'm Jane Lindholm. The benefits of getting kids involved in sports are well known. Learning about teamwork, making friends, staying fit and healthy. But as kids get older and the sports get more intense, there's also more possibility for injury. And the more we learn about head injuries and the dangers of concussion, the more concern gets focused on high-impact high school sports. Today on the show, we're going to look at high school sports and brain injuries and how parents, coaches, and doctors weigh the pros and cons. I'm joined by Dr. Matthew Gammons, Medical Director of Sports Medicine and the Sports Concussion Clinic at the Vermont Orthopedic Clinic in Rutland. He's at the VPR studios at PEG TV in Rutland. Dr. Gammons, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
And we're also joined by Denise Alosa, athletic trainer at South Burlington High School, who's here with me in our studios in Colchester. Hi, Denise. Nice to have you with us.
Nice to be here.
So, Denise, I'm going to start with you. From your experience, what are common ways that you see high school athletes getting concussions?
Well, really, it's across the board. Just about every sport is at some risk in one way or another. So I have kids coming to me from anything from a sport to something that happened at home to a weekend activity can be all across the board.
And Dr. Gammons, what do you see?
Yeah, I would agree with Denise. I mean, certainly the rates of concussion are highest in collision sports like football. But I've even had concussions in golfers who just happened to slip and fall down.
Well, and it sounds like, you know, football is certainly one that people are aware of and one that is a high impact sport and where players are coming together all the time. But we're hearing more and more that other sports are also at issue. Girls soccer, for example, has a high increase in the number of head injuries that are being reported. Are you seeing that coming from soccer players, Dr. Gammons?
Well, to a degree, the question of whether there's been a true increase in the rates in like women's soccer versus is there just been some increased reporting and are we actually paying attention to them, I think is a question we don't have the answer to. But yeah, we certainly see it in soccer a fair amount, in sports like basketball that are typically classified more as contact sports rather than collision sports.
In the stats we've been finding, it looks like something around 300,000 concussions are reported yearly from high school athletes. And, you know, there are obviously major gradations in brain injuries as there are in other injuries. So that many concussions can sound either like no big deal or hugely troubling if you're just going from one end of the spectrum or the other. But many are probably mild, others are more serious. Denise, how do you contextualize those statistics when we just say this many concussions every year?
Well, I think it's a hard thing to wrap your head around in terms of the numbers, and those are ones that go reported, and then there's a huge number that don't go reported, you know, a bump on the head or someone that sees someone like me on the sideline that maybe isn't concussed enough to you know, seek further medical attention. So the numbers are a very difficult number to track.
Yeah, Dr. Gammons, how do you see that statistic? I mean, 300,000 student athletes sounds alarming, or, you know, it could be not alarming.
Well, again, I think if you put it in context of the number of athletes that participate, you know, in the tens of millions, then it's probably a relatively low number. I do think that there's some, you know, there's some risk of underreporting, but I also think, you know, probably over recent years, there's actually some risk of overreporting as well, you know, given our desire to not miss these injuries, given that, you know, any kid who shows any signs often gets classified with concussion regardless of whether or not we're sure about it. So I think it probably balances out a little bit, and the numbers seem to be relatively steady. I just actually got the report from the 2016-2017 school year. And they lump head, face, and concussion together, but it was just shy of 300,000 injuries altogether. Hmm. So it seems to be relatively stable, at least in that limited group of athletes.
Let's go to Jack, who's calling in from Middlebury. Hi, Jack. Go right ahead.
Hi, Jane.
Hi.
So, Jane, I'm a pediatrician in Middlebury, and more parents are asking me, should I let my son play football in light of the news about NFL players and chronic traumatic encephalopathy? And one question that I have is, I think concussions are the tip of the iceberg. Kids who play football are being subjected to repetitive subconcussive impacts, and we don't really know what the long-term consequences of that are. particularly given the susceptibility that we know exists in younger, growing, developing brains. There recently was an article in the journal Translational Psychiatry from Boston University, which demonstrated that adults who began playing tackle football before the age of 12 suffered more behavioral, emotional, and cognitive problems later in life than those players who started tackle football after the age of 12. So there seems to be this window of susceptibility in particularly adolescents and kids who are playing high school football. And I would just like to ask the panelists about what we understand about this precautionary principle in epidemiology, that if there's suggestion of harm from an environmental insult like toxins or, in this case, repetitive subconcussive injuries, shouldn't that lead us to limit exposure and to be especially mindful of that heightened susceptibility of young people and adolescents?
Jack, I will ask them, but what's your perspective, since you obviously have been thinking and researching on this?
Well, when parents ask me this question, what I say to them is, I think it's important for you to know the risks and weigh the benefits. And then I say, when I'm faced with a difficult clinical decision, I'm often guided by the question of what would I do if this was my child? And I say to them, I would not let my son play football.
You bring up the F word, football. We knew it was coming. Jack, thanks for the call. I appreciate it. And, we're not exclusively focusing on football today. I want to make that very clear. But it is a sport that comes in for a lot of attention and one where a lot of attention is paid to head injuries. We got a note from Dave A. who says, why are kids even allowed to play football anymore? We don't let kids take recreational drugs for fear of damaging their brains, but we let them play a violent game that results in many of them getting concussions. Why? This is a no-brainer. Ban high school football. Dr. Gammons, I've heard you speak on this before. That's not a perspective you share, is it?
No, it's not. And again, it goes to perspective. I think, like you said, putting it in the big picture of, how likely is a kid to get a concussion? And most of our athletes that play high school football don't get concussions. So it's not like every kid who's on the field is exposing themselves. The question of, what about these repetitive impacts is one that we don't really know. The study that the doctor was just on the phone spoke about was really pretty limited in its methodology. I mean, you're talking to people years and years and years and years later after they played football. If you read actually the limitations of the study, they really spell it out pretty well that, this is not proved causation. It's just an association. And, I take the opposite approach. Honestly, I have two daughters, but if I had males or I suppose if my daughter wanted to play football, I wouldn't have an issue with it. I certainly wouldn't go into it blindly. And I think we've made progress in terms of changing of how we can limit exposure over time by when you allow athletes to tackle, how you teach them how to tackle. But, the risk of my son or daughter riding or somebody's son or daughter riding in a car over the same period of time that they're on the football field, the risk of the car is a million times greater. So I think you just have to put everything in context.
If you're a parent, though, and you have, say, a young child and you're thinking about getting them involved in sports and you have the option of putting them in a Pop Warner League or steering them maybe towards soccer or cross-country running or a different sport that perhaps instills less fear in you, would you do that, Dr. Gammons?
No, I think I would never want to force my child into any sport. So to me, it's really what's the child most interested in, because the health benefits of exercise and all the things you spoke of to open, I think way outweigh the potential risks. But I certainly, if my child had no interest in playing football, I certainly wouldn't force them into playing football.
Denise Alosa, what's your perspective on this?
Well, I think the younger group, and we're seeing more and more youth sports going to, say, flag football or learning the game without tackle, and I think that's a reasonable approach up until, high school level. And certainly you see professional athletes and some of the great NFL greats say, listen, I never even started playing till I was in high school. So I think if you're athletic and have a tendency in that direction, no matter what sport you play, you're probably going to get better at the other sport just purely by moving and running and developing strength and coordination and so forth. So
you're talking about cross training.
Cross training to a degree and playing a lot of a variety of different things. I think we certainly know that athletes that focus on one particular sport have a little higher injury rate than athletes that that diversify. I can tell you from the sidelines, at least in Vermont, the concussion rate in football is not great. We're 5 games into the season so far this year, and at my school we've had 1 in football. So I think,
how does that compare with the other sports?
About the same. Soccer 1. Each girls in and boys at different levels. That would be freshman, varsity, and JV. So I think that that there's risk wherever we go, and of course I also think that there's technique and there's coaching and there's culture around that particular activity or sport that's also equally as important.
You mentioned one concussion. Jack was talking partly about repetitive subconcussive injury. We got another note about that from Elliot in Middlesex, who says most sports protocols focus exclusively on concussions, but it is documented that athletes in contact sports experience many more subconcussive than concussive hits. Isn't there a risk of injury to the brain from repeated blows to the head that don't produce observable symptoms of concussion? And if so, what can be done to protect athletes from that? Denise, what do you do or think about in that arena?
Well, I think as Dr. Gammons mentioned, we really know very, very, a very small amount about the subconcussive and subconcussive blows and the long-term effect of that. So certainly there are some rules and activity modifications that have been made surrounding that, like not allowing younger children to have head balls in soccer over and over again, or using an appropriate size ball or weighted ball, whatever that might be. And again, the flag football versus tackle football. I think hockey, no checking for until a certain level of activity. So I think our awareness is better about that, and making some rule changes related to that is probably our best defense.
Today we're looking at high school sports and injuries, particularly brain injuries. We're talking with Denise Alosa, athletic trainer at South Burlington High School, and with Dr. Matthew Gammons, medical director of sports medicine and the Sports Concussion Clinic at the Vermont Orthopedic Clinic in Rutland. Let's go to David, who's calling in from Rutland. Hi, David. Go right ahead.
Hi, Jane. How are you doing today?
Great. How about you?
I'm a big fan of your show, and I've heard you all discuss this before, but I think one thing that's being left out of the conversation is the fact that as a coach in sports, particularly football in the state of Vermont, the state of Vermont gets it right. You have to be a USA player safety trained coach in order to coach in this state. Not to mention, where I coach, we also are CPR and AED certified. So that means we have a good overview of what we have to do to keep the kids safe. Not to mention some of the tactics, or rather techniques, that are used in tackling today are being refined to make it to where kids are safer. I think that's one reason why, as Denise mentioned, concussion rates are not that prevalent right now in football, because of the fact that we work so hard to keep that from happening.
David, do you coach at the high school level?
Yes, ma'am. And I coached college ball for years.
So one thing that I'm hearing, I really appreciate you calling in, and one thing that I'm hearing is, I think, so correct me if I'm wrong, I feel like defensiveness, that maybe you feel like you've been criticized, or football has been unfairly criticized. Is that an accurate thing that I'm hearing?
Well, on the contrary, I think that if anything, it's just a matter of people realizing what coaches go through to be able to make sure we get it right, to make sure that we are trained in a manner that keeps kids safe. Because in the end, you want them to learn the game, you want them to love the game, but you also want them to be safe and have the comfort of the fact that they know what they're doing. And having coaches who are properly trained, having coaches who can go out there and teach the kids and teach them to be safe in the game that they play is half the battle. If you can do that, I mean, you don't always have control over them once they get out on the field, but if they learn how to, and those repetitions that they go through make sure they know how to tackle properly and how to not injure themselves in doing so, that makes a big difference. And the training the coaches go through in the state of Vermont is right on the money. It's definitely in compliance with the highest level that they require across the U.S.
David, I appreciate your call. Thanks very much for doing that and calling in and sharing your experience with us. Denise Alosa, can you talk a little bit about what the state requires in terms of coach training, but also what athletic trainers are supposed to do in a situation like a hit that might be a concussion?
Sure. The state requires all high school coaches for all sports to do a online concussion course, and they need to do that every 2 years. It also requires that we give information to all parents and athletes each season for every sport. So those are some informational kinds of materials to make sure people are aware of what the process will be, if and when, or how to prevent concussions. As an athletic trainer, we're trained from an educational point of view and have continuing education requirement units and so forth that we all go through. We do see the great number of concussions right off the sideline. So the state requirement requires anyone at a high school level sport to seven through 12 to report a concussion to the parent within 24 hours of the concussion being sustained.
Now, athletic trainers presumably have more training in medical issues than coaches do. And a lot of this is falling on coaches if there are schools that don't have an athletic trainer on site. And many schools don't. I mean, there are not each school has one athletic trainer who can be there for every practice or every game. Is that an issue? Or do you see the training that, as David said, coaches get as being sufficient to identify these kinds of issues?
It's an issue to some degree. I mean, coaches have certainly gotten better and have the ability to be trained enough to pull an athlete out of an activity and not let them return that particular day, and that's what they're asked to do. In the process of returning an athlete to play or evaluating the athlete after they've been taken off the field requires more specialized training, and that would fall on either an athletic trainer or a physician to be able to do that after the fact.
Our number, if you have a thought or a question about high school sports and brain injuries, is 800-639-2211. You can also post a note on Twitter or on Facebook. Mike is on the line with us from Cornwall. Hi, Mike. Go right ahead.
Hi.
Hi.
My question is, the physician said something about children being a million times more likely to get a concussion driving a car than they are playing football. I wonder if he has any studies or data to support that statistic.
Mike, thanks for the call. Dr. Gammons, I imagine that was a bit of hyperbole to say a million times, but where do you make the comparison?
Well, a million may have been a little bit much, but they are. If you look at just data on rates of youth that come out of the government statistics and other statistics in terms of the highway safety, adolescents are much, much more likely to sustain serious injury, whether it be head, neck, or otherwise, in an auto accident than they are on the playing field, even in sports like football. So that data, that epidemiological data is there.
You know, in some of the conversations that we've had, and as I said, I heard you speak at a panel before, Dr. Gammons, it almost feels like, that you think that we as a culture or as a society have gone maybe too far in the area of fear about high school sports, particularly football and brain injuries. But this is also, your career. Your career is to keep people healthy and safe and to deal with sports injuries and to make sure that athletes can get back in the game and be healthy. So what is your actual perspective on how we should contextualize this idea of head injuries, and which can be very, very serious?
Well, I mean, I think, that there's been some good out of the last 15 to 20 years when a big sort of educational push has come on and getting everybody on board and understanding these are serious injuries. Because certainly when I started training, we spent a lot of time trying to convince athletes, parents, and coaches that they got to take this seriously. We now spend a lot of time trying to explain to people that their son or daughter is going to be okay after they've had these injuries, because the pendulum has swung and maybe a bit too far. But I would say that, the good that's come out of that is all the things that we're discussing, is that we're looking closer at these things. We are looking for ways to protect athletes, ways to make sure athletes are safe going back. But I think that has to be balanced with the fact that, again, the overall benefit of sports for most kids way outweighs the risk that they're going to take on the field. And in the end, a parent's decision is whether or not they want to let their child participate in the sport. That's up to the parent. I mean, my job is to try to educate them the best we can. But there is so much missing information right now, and particularly when it comes to head injuries and subconcussive blows, that to make the leap to say this is going to be a problem for everybody or for lots of people, I think is not reasonable. And there was just actually a study that was published that looked at rates of other types of neurodegenerative disease in the brain, you know, brain problems later on. And you know, some of the professions that had the highest risks were mathematicians, architects, librarians, you know, groups of people that are obviously very bright people that aren't hitting their heads a lot. I'm not saying that those things, there's not a direct causation there, but that's the difference. When you're associating with something versus saying something causes something, those are two different things. And, you know, nothing is without consequence. And I think if you start discouraging kids from playing sports they're passionate about or interested in, there's a downside to that too.
Let's go to Ben, who's on the line with us from Bristol. Hi, Ben. Go ahead.
Hi. So I coach. I did coaching for like 10 years of youth football in high school, and at no time did any of my kids that I coached had concussions. Matter of fact, they only had one kid that got injured, and that was with a broken arm. You know, one of the things I stressed was we practiced tackling techniques, you know, making sure their eyes were looking up always in the chest, you know, and tried real hard not to come in tackling with their heads down. You know, that's just, you know, like I said, you know, and also in flag football, the kids wear helmets. And I've talked to parents whose kids play soccer and youth soccer, and they seem to have more injuries than when the kids played youth football. That's just my take on it.
Well, Ben, I appreciate your perspective. Thanks for calling in. Let's get a different one here from Carl in Hyde Park. Hi, Carl.
Yeah, hi. I played football through college, and I think there's something that actually the coach that or the youth coach that was just on and the high school coach mentioned. People attribute head injuries to tackles, but you have to remember that football is a collision sport, and so each time a lineman enters into a play, chances are he's hitting his head against the opposing lineman's head. And while that may not result in a concussion, there's probably some long-term effect of that. And I think what schools should do is that there is a test that can be administered to determine a baseline so that if a concussion is deemed to have happened, they can test where the child is in comparison to where they were when they had that baseline test done. And I know I was on the school board here in at Lamoille North, and while we don't have a football program, we do have soccer, and one of our soccer players had a concussion, and we hadn't up to that point administered that, but afterwards we did just as a preventive type of measure.
Carl, thanks for sharing your perspective. I appreciate that. Denise, is that something that you do in South Burlington, this idea of testing athletes at the beginning of the season of what their baseline is so that you have a better sense? Because, you know, my understanding is that concussions can behave a little bit differently or TBIs can behave a little bit differently in people depending on who they are. And so having that baseline response is helpful to know how they're different after repeated hits or after a concussion.
That's correct. We do not baseline test our athletes at South Burlington, and it's just an approach that we've chosen not to take. There certainly are many schools that do it. I think it's a tool in your toolbox to be able to use to help you make decisions about the treatment and the protocol and the returning to play. I don't think it's a be-all, end-all, and it raises, there's a number of questions about how valid some of the tests are and are they specific enough to pick up certain subtleties, particularly in the age group that I work with. So, you know, from age, say, 13 to 18, we know there's lots and lots of growth in all ways, physically, emotional, mentally. And so the question is, when do you test them? How do you test them? How often do you test them? And is some of the variability in those tests just purely related to their maturity? So there are a number of studies that really are positive for using a baseline test, and then there's a number of them that sort of say that maybe they're in terms of that particular age group, maybe they don't pick up the information that would be most valuable. So
would you like to have it in your toolbox? Is this something you'd like to see the school district employ?
It's kind of my decision, and we've just gone through lots of different processes in terms of developing our own protocol, and we just haven't felt that it was going to add a huge difference in how we manage our concussions day to day.
We got a note from Ryan in Rutland who says, I just wanted to comment that many players, including myself, received a concussion playing football, not during games, but at practice. Practice is where most injuries occur. Players looking to make a big hit so coaches see their potential. Also, some players are bullies on your team and will look to hurt you on purpose. They'll lead with their helmets on hits. I was more scared of my own teammates than any team we ever faced. I played D1 football in college and started, I assume he means in college, although I guess we could be D1 in high school as well. I'll never let my kids play football. I have memory loss and anger issues that I attribute to football concussions. A final note I'd like to add is that the helmet's padding was not sufficient a few years ago. Today's helmets are much more protective than what we wore 10 years ago, and schools should be required to buy the highest protection helmets. On that question of helmets, Nick wrote, hockey has been my kids' sport as well as mine. I've seen the use of helmet sensors, but have not used them. Are they worth installing on my kids' helmet? Dr. Gammons, what do you think?
The short answer is no. The sensor technology, really, we don't really know what to do with the information. There's no group worldwide that recommends using in-helmet sensors as a way to try to detect whether or not a concussion has occurred or if an athlete's okay. Mostly because when you look at the data that we have coming out of helmet sensors, it's all over the map. I mean, some kids have really high forces applied to the head but never have any symptoms. Other kids have relatively low forces and have symptoms. And so where do you set the threshold? And there's a whole host of issues that go along with that. In terms of just helmets in general, as somebody made the comment there, you know, the truth is the helmet is not designed and will never be designed to keep your brain from seeing forces that cause concussion. The helmet's designed to protect the skull from breaking. It's designed to help prevent bleeding and other things, and it does a pretty good job at that. But it really doesn't control the forces well that get translated to the brain. And if you just think about a crash test dummy in a car, you know, the cage of the car does a great job absorbing the impact, but the dummy still flails around in the car. Otherwise, you wouldn't need seatbelts and airbags. So while, yes, I agree, you know, good helmets, well-maintained helmets, and properly fitting equipment are important, the helmet is really probably not a preventative measure when we're talking about these head injuries.
Denise, can you take us out onto the field right now and explain or describe what you do when an athlete that you're watching over, you know, collides with another athlete and there's a what appears to be a head injury? Take us through your protocol.
Well, it varies depending, obviously, on if the person stays on the field or off the field. But essentially, it's aimed at assessing their overall health, from cognitive and thinking ability to memory to some of their physical symptoms, headache, dizziness, nausea. And the thing that's difficult about concussions is so many of the reported symptoms are just that, they're symptoms and not signs. So none of us can see if you're dizzy, none of us can see if you're nauseous, none of us can see if you have a headache. And so we have to rely on the athlete reporting those symptoms to us and try and quantify them. And so based on that, we sort of serially reevaluate them, and initially on the sideline when it happens, and then usually 10 to 20 minutes after, and often symptoms are a little bit delayed in terms of how they present. So we monitor them pretty closely for the first 24 hours. You know, we make sure if we send them home, it's, you know, with a parent and a responsible adult. And if it's more significant, do they have memory issues or, a lot of pain or just dysfunction, then we would likely send them, you know, to be further evaluated, whether it be at the hospital or their pediatricians or to a concussion clinic like Dr. Gammon. So that sort of the adage is, if you've seen one concussion, you've seen one concussion. And so they are just a huge variability of how they present.
Does that worry you as an athletic trainer, or is that, I mean?
It doesn't worry me, probably because I've seen so many. it's very different. Every presentation is different. And so it's just important to pay attention, evaluate the athlete consistently, and follow them along and see how they recover.
Now, you know, I was a high school athlete. I'm not saying whether I was very good or not, but I know high school athletes, and, you know, the competitive ones want to get back in the game sometimes before they're ready. And with a concussion, which can be, you know, sometimes it's easy to mask the symptoms if you're trying, or, you know, you may think it's not that big a deal. I can run. Let me play. How do you evaluate when a player is lying to you about whether they're ready or not?
It's tricky. I mean, I have a benefit that I'm at school all the time, every day, and that I get to know kids. So that's a huge difference. You know, you know how they normally act, how they normally present, and if they don't feel well, it's pretty hard if you really don't feel well to pretend you feel well, particularly surrounding physical activity. So that's a benefit that I have at being at my school. And in Vermont right now, most Division I and II schools have an athletic trainer a good portion of the time. The smaller schools do not. So managing those people is a little more of a challenge for those schools. But it remains a moving target of how do you pick up the correct the person that's really telling you the truth, and then the person that's really pushing the boundaries and wants to get back sooner.
Let's go to Jerry in St. Johnsbury. Hi, Jerry. Go ahead.
As a high school educator in Vermont and New Hampshire for between 30 and 40 years, I've observed a huge number of students in various contact sports. I continually listen to coaches, and the ones today, the coaches and trainers, seem to echo the same sentiments that there's a certain type of training that does magic things and prevents the kids from having damage or reduces the possibility at all. I really question the wisdom of that. I think of soldiers being well trained in boot camp before they go up and they still get shot. I would never consider putting a child of mine or any relative of mine in these sports. Coaches carry an enormous weight in public education in most of the schools in Vermont and New Hampshire. Their word pretty much dictates things. And to keep their sports going and their positions going, I sometimes feel that they have a bit of exaggeration about the safety of the course.
Jerry, I appreciate your perspective, and I want to put this, Dr. Gammons, we're going to give you the last word here. You know, you see athletes, and you think about this issue, and you said you have kids yourself. So where do you take Jerry's perspective and move on from it?
Well, I think you're right. I mean, I think there is no way we're going to prevent all injuries. I think common sense plays a huge part in sort of how we approach both injury prevention and training in athletes. And, you know, the truth is that, you know, we are at the very very beginning of understanding what this sort of long-term sort of consequences may be. If you look at the big amount of data early on, most of it shows that it's okay. There's some pockets of things that say, well, maybe it's not okay, but you know, lots of things in medicine, you know, the finish line isn't clear. And I think in the end, you know, kids are going to benefit way more from sports than they're not. And that in most cases, even if they sustain an injury or a couple injuries over time, they're going to be okay. And that continuing to educate parents, athletes, coaches on sort of, hey, listen, this is a significant injury. We need to make sure that you're out of harm's way and you recover. If we do that, that's probably going to take care of a lot of the issues that we would worry about down the road.
Dr. Matthew Gammons is Medical Director of Sports Medicine and Sports Concussion Clinic at the Vermont Orthopedic Clinic in Rutland. Thanks very much for being on the show today.
Thanks for having me.
And Denise Alosa is the athletic trainer at South Burlington High School. Good luck with the season.
Thank you.